I'll introduce everybody at the table so that you know who is speaking at all times. My immediate right is Mr. Donald Powers, newly elected president of Purdue's Board of Trustees. His right is President Arthur Hansen, and his right is his wife Nancy. Dr. Hansen called his press conference this morning. He has an announcement. I will get right to it and turn it over to him. We will take questions immediately after. I just ask that when you ask a question, please state your name and the organization you represent. Dr. Hansen.
Thank you, Joe. Last evening, I announced to the Board of Trustees my intention to step down as president of Purdue University. As I mentioned to the board when I first was hired, the question was asked of me, how long do you think that you should serve or a college president should serve, especially at Purdue University? And I remarked at that time, somewhere between 7 to 10 years. I based that observation on my colleagues and others who had served as presidents. I'm now in my 11th year as president of Purdue, and of course in those intervening years between 7 and 10, I've been asked several times about my plans. Basically, my opinion has not changed, and I think therefore we have reached what I would call the right time. Actually, in my total service as a college president, the time has been 13 years if I count my 2 years at Georgia Tech. During this past year, Mrs. Hansen and I have given serious thought about our future and a lifestyle that really does not require the total commitment inherent in the presidency of a major university. However, before taking any steps, there were several goals I wanted to see reached or completed before any announcement of a change might be made. First of all, I was deeply engaged in our campaign for the 80s, our financial campaign for Purdue, and I wanted to see that come to at least a degree of success. We had a goal of $34.2 million to reach. I was pleased this morning to announce to the board that the total amount received to date is now in excess of $40 million. So at least I thought that goal had been reached. I also wanted to be certain, really as a commitment to the board when I first came here, that a good development program would be brought into being. And as I look back now and see the progress that has been made, I'm satisfied that that goal has been reached as well. We have a fine development operation in place under the direction of Vice President Day, and I have every hope that that will continue and will bring strength to the university. Finally, I looked ahead at a very critical time in the history of the university. The economic situation is edgy at the present time, and I wanted to be certain that we had done some effective planning as we faced, in particular, the 1983-85 biennium. I worked with my colleagues very closely on this, and I feel quite certain we have a good plan in place, but that most important, from my standpoint, that the implementation of that plan should be carried out by a new president, a president who will be able to make the critical decisions which I think will be required and enhance the welfare of the university. So there is an issue of what I have simply called the right time. Now, in saying that, I would point out that's a rational decision more than anything else. One thinks about these things and then makes up one's mind. That does not necessarily mean it is a simple emotional decision. The most difficult part of this announcement from my standpoint will be the ultimate separation from so many people who have treated us so kindly here at Purdue. The alumni, the students, the faculty, the townspeople, and the trustees. No president and his wife could have asked for more from these people who have been such a positive factor in our lives. As I mentioned to the trustees last night, I have been particularly pleased to work with them. I think as I have viewed other universities and their boards, I think we have perhaps the finest board of trustees of any major university of which I am aware, and I have been just simply extremely fortunate to have had that opportunity to work with them. Along with that, I would have to point out the joy I've had in working with which I would call the Purdue administrative team. The administrators that have worked closely with me have been not only excellent people in their own way and fine administrators, but also close friends. And that concept of the team has made my task and my work here at the university simply enjoyable. And I also would have to single out the students as well. I think when one steps down from a teaching position, one gives something up, the contact with students and the life with students that you enjoy. That's been compensated largely for Nancy and me at Purdue by the chance to be with them. And I've said this to alumni, I've said it to many others. I don't think, again, you'll find a better group of students any place than here at Purdue. And our thanks for the joys that we have received must indeed go to them. My current plans are not fixed. I would expect to leave the university sometime next year unless a replacement can be found sooner. So Nancy and I, again, want to thank all who have helped us, but no matter what the future may bring, we shall look back on these last 10.5 years as truly some of the most rewarding that we have ever had. We could not have asked for more. Thank you.
I believe that Mr. Powers has a statement.
Art Hansen has done a magnificent job as president of Purdue. All of us on the Board of Trustees are saddened by his leaving, but we understand his sentiments and, of course, accept his decision, though most regretfully. The goal of the trustees now is to select the best possible person to become Purdue's 9th president. The board will begin a nationwide search for Dr. Hansen's successor with appropriate involvement of faculty, alumni, students, and friends of the university. We will convene a special meeting of the trustees in the very near future to set the process in motion. Aside from that, may I express my personal sense of loss and sadness with Dr. Hansen and Nancy's decision to step down as president. They have given us 10 wonderful years. We thank you.
Thank you, Don.
Questions? Joe?
The expectation is always there that things will improve. I think the critical element right now would be, of course, the upswing of the economy. I think that one cannot judge this far in advance as to what that is apt to be. I do know, however, that the needs of this university are very great. And I would go further than that and say it transcends Purdue University. I think one of the great concerns I have is with the general picture of higher education. And unless somehow we find a way and society responds to fund, and particularly our large public universities, I believe that the impact on our economy, the impact on the future welfare of this country could be very seriously affected. I think here of the number of young people we turn out every year in prime areas of national needs, by national needs, economic needs, defense needs, and the like, and we cannot allow that to slip. At the present time, I think we are fighting an uphill battle to get that point across. The battle is not only to retain faculty, to have adequate space to house those faculty is important, to provide an environment for them, to get the kind of equipment that puts us on the leading edge. These things we've got to have, or the quality of this university and those of other universities as well, like Purdue, will decline. And so my My hopes and expectations are that that message will come through and that the state of Indiana will respond.
Dr. Hanson, I'm Don Little from WACY. I guess looking back over your tenure here at the university, what your feelings are as far as your most significant achievement or the most significant change you've seen in the university since you've been here?
When one is asked a question, I've been asked this before, I guess everywhere between 7 and 10 years, about what do you think you're going to do? And with that, the key question, what do you regard as your most significant achievements? And the answer is, you cannot take yourself in isolation and say, I have done this or I have done that. Whatever has been done is a consequence of a number of things, but most importantly, the people that work with you. And I therefore would reply in a little different way. What are the things I now see that I'm particularly proud of relative to Purdue as this time has come? I think at the top of the list, I would have to really say it is the quality of our people, the quality of our faculty. We have an outstanding faculty. I remember when I came here, Fred Hovde said to me, I leave you a fine university. And I hope I might say to someone who would follow me, I leave you even a finer university. So I think that is the element that is most important to me, because without a great faculty, you cannot have a great university. Second, of course, as I mentioned earlier, one of the charges that I had was to bring into being a good development office and pursue private funding, and I think that has gone well, as evidenced at least by the campaign, and I'm proud of that. Now, one can also look around the campus today and see the changes in the physical plan. The new buildings that have been built during my 10 years here, and I would reiterate, one cannot take credit for that directly. This is, again, a function of what the state has done, the largesse of the state, you might say, the wisdom of the General Assembly in helping to provide those funds, and finally, the faith that private citizens, alumni, and friends have placed in our university. Because some of the construction we have had and some of the construction we will have has come from private sources. So I look at changes or improvements, and I would say at the top of the list would be that fine faculty and the reputation of the university. But I would have to perhaps go one step further and talk about a part that I have played. I think I have been very fortunate, and I think the word is indeed fortunate, in putting together an administrative team. Part of that team reports directly to me, and part of that team reports to those who report to me. I think here of our directors and our deans and others that truly make this university function so well. And I'm very proud of that. And I think I have just been the most fortunate president in the world to have made choices that fulfilled my expectation in every single way. And that team will be the team that a new president would inherit. And I would say unashamedly, no president could ask for a finer administrative group to work with. They're just superb.
Dr. Hanson, I'm Greg Zawisher with WBA. And you indicated that your future plans are not quite firmed up yet, but do you have any idea whether it might include an academic position or a semi-retirement?
Greg, I would say this. First of all, I have been asked by some people, would you consider taking on another college presidency? My answer is no, I would not, and I don't mean to be flippant or humorous about that, but that is the type of a task that does require a special kind of commitment, and if I were going to choose another college presidency, Greg, I would simply stay here. I think Nancy and I will simply keep our options open at this point and see what comes along. One would also, of course, give serious consideration to making use of talents that one happens to have. I think if I had my prime choice and had the wherewithal to go with it, Nancy and I would open up a marina someplace, and we'd help people catch fish. That's my first love, Greg, but I'm simply not quite in the position right now to achieve that. Sometime, yes, but not quite yet.
Dr. Hanson, Chris Nolte with WASK Radio. I'm going to give you an opportunity to abandon all humility here. And since you are, my count is right, the seventh president, or the eighth president, rather, of Purdue, give you an opportunity to look back and compare yourself to your predecessors. I said, a chance to abandon all humility. How do you think that you've compared, relatively speaking, to the people in the past?
That much humility I cannot abandon. I would say something, however, that might relate to that particular question. I think it is very difficult to compare a previous president with a current president or any president that may come along. Times change. I've often looked back on the record, for example, of President Eliot and thought that was a time and state of higher education that I might have enjoyed. And I say that because President Eliot, in many respects, was a type of person who had much greater direct control. I talked to Don Powers earlier today, and it seems that Don had written a letter to the, published something in the Exponent, and President Eliot called him in and talked to him about that. I cannot imagine that happening. Well, it could happen in my case, but that was the style of a president. It demanded a certain kind of a person to respond to that. Many cases, faculty appointments were approved directly by the president. Today's university is much more complex. I think if I had to make a distinction, I would come back to the term I've used repeatedly, the emphasis on a team. I've tried to use that more perhaps than my predecessors have, and I think in part because things are different. They are in a different milieu, a different time than they were at the time of President Hovde and President Eliot. My memories of President Hovde are particularly warm, though I would say mixed, as he officiated at my graduation, and it is a very difficult thing to come back into the office of the man who gave you your degree and say, I'm going to take your place. That is not simple to do. President Hovde was truly, by any standards, a gentleman and a great scholar, and I look back on that quality of his life, and I've had many opportunities to be with him since that time. He's an impressive man. I think, again, as I look at my own style by comparison, we have tried to be, what should I say, more informal. We have tried to make our home, for instance, open to the campus, to the faculty, and to the students, not because of any pre-designed plan, but because that is what we enjoy. As I repeat myself, the great joy that we have had here has been that direct one-on-one association. Oftentimes people have remarked about the time we have spent with students and say, is this necessary? The answer is, of course it's not necessary, but this is what we enjoy. So I think it's been a little more of that style. Finally, and I have talked with this at length with those people directly who report to me, I think we have worked in more of a consensus mode. I see that very close to home in individuals who have great responsibility, like Fred Ford and Phil Haas, our executive vice presidents, who are not what I would call autocrats. They are people who gain the support of people under them by talking things out, by working with them, and that kind of a style which builds a total team is the one I think that I have practiced, which may have been somewhat different than those of my predecessors, but I would repeat myself again. Times change, universities change, problems change, and every time that happens, I think you look for the person that is ready at that point in time to do the unique job the university faces.
Are you planning on taking an active role in picking your successor?
That job is up to the trustees. There's one thing, you know, if one were to summarize in a few words, as has been said so many times, of the role of the trustees hire and fire the president. I always have been very conscious of that fact. Now, certainly, if Mr. Powers or any of the trustees were to ask me opinions and get my judgment about the job, what it entails, as guidance for them, I'd be very, very happy to furnish that. I think, indeed, the insight that one has of a job might be helpful, but beyond that, it is their call to make. And I would only say I am available for any consultation help I might provide. One last thing. I have left Nancy sitting over here all by herself, and I think it might be well if you said hello, Nancy.
I don't think so. I'll cry.
Can you tell us a little bit about the past couple of days and some of the things you learned and found out about and discussions you had?
Well, the past couple of days have been rather hectic. The reason for my trip was to meet with the selection committee for the A&M system and to finally then meet with their Board of Regents, at which time they offered me the position of Chancellor of the State System, which I finally accepted. It's been a rather hectic several days in trying to be there with Nancy and understand exactly what it is that we'll be looking forward to. It'll be a change, a significant change from that which I've had here at Purdue. But I think at this particular point in my career, it'll be a rather exciting challenge.
Is there anything in particular that you're most looking forward to?
Well, it's hard to say. The job is quite different from that which I've had here. It would be as if I had kept my job as really CEO of the Purdue system, but without the responsibilities of the university itself. Really, the role that I have played here is Chief Executive Officer of the Purdue system, and what I have often called Chief Operating Officer of Purdue. And the new job has about the same scope, except that I will not be a Chief Operating Officer of a particular university. It's somewhere in between what I would call the state board that we have here, the Commissioner for Higher Education, and the position I have here at Purdue. So it'll be strictly management, and to some extent I will miss, of course, the contact with faculty and the contact with students that I've had here, which have been a very important part of my life here at Purdue with Nancy. It'll be different, and I will not be involved directly in fundraising as I have been here. That'll be the job of the individual units. One of the tasks that I will have very early on is to find a new president for Prairie View A&M, which is a component of the system. Their president resigned on Tuesday, and so I'm in the same position somewhat as our trustees are here, looking for a new president, and that'll be one of my very first tasks, to find somebody for that particular college.
They had been wooing you more or less ever since the A&M had been searching for a new president since last summer, I believe. Was there one thing in particular that finally led to your decision to accept the position as chancellor of the system?
Well, I think not. I think it was more of a change in my own feelings when I thought about resigning, and I actually had given it serious thought. In fact, if it had not been for the campaign, I probably would have stepped down last July, but the campaign was still going on very actively at that time, and as a result of that, I thought I'd finish up the campaign and then go ahead. I think my position had been rather ambivalent. One looks at what the next options might be like, and I think you know what you don't want to do, and one of the things I didn't want to do was not do anything. As appealing as that seems ever so often, I felt that would not be a good way to go. The other options, of course, would be to get into the corporate world, and that's difficult at this point in my life, except if I were to go on to into a company as a staff person, which I couldn't live with either, I think. Once you've had the taste of management, the staff idea doesn't sound that appealing to me. I might also have taken the option of, the term is being a professional director. I have been on corporate boards, and I thought of expanding that. The government possibilities I looked at briefly, but there was nothing there again at the time that I could see was very challenging. So it came down to making use of the background and the experience that I had, and that seemed to still point toward higher education. Now, within that, I thought I was limited to really three choices. One would be to go back to classroom, and that was always appealing. That's why I got into higher education to start with. The idea of taking on another college presidency was simply out. I could not conceive of doing that. I think that even if I had been offered a very prestigious private university, I would have turned it down. I don't think I could have beat the situation here at Purdue in any way, shape, or form. So at that point, the one thing that began to have growing appeal to me was a state system in which I could be away from the day-to-day operation of the university and really try to put my experience to use in management, policy making, strategic planning. That had appeal. So as it turned out, there were basically three systems that had contacted me, and of those, the one that seemed to have the greatest challenge and also along with that the greatest potential from the standpoint that I could do something in a reasonably short period of time was the A&M system. So as it sifted down and I spoke more and more with the people there, the Board of Regents and their search committee, that seemed to be the best possible choice. But I gradually drifted in that direction. Each system had its own particular challenge. One at least was very, very large, and that was a very enticing job, except for the fact that, again, it was a question of keeping things together and so on. This system is not that large. It's not much larger than Purdue's system, really, but it has an opportunity right now, I think, for fairly rapid growth and expansion that makes the job somewhat more challenging. And I can't think of the present time of going on a number of years and trying to work with a holding operation. I think that's the thing that triggered me. There was a chance to do something in a fairly short period of time. At least that's my expectation. It may not work out that way ultimately.
It can be assumed that the economic climate in Texas is probably a good bit healthier than in Indiana. Was that at all an inducement in your decision?
Yes, very much so. I think one of the things you hope to do, and this is why in talking about the other systems that I had been interested in, this one seemed to be the most challenging, that at least at the present time the economic situation there is quite good. I don't want to make anybody here feel badly. The salary raises last year for the faculty almost throughout the state were 17%, which was very, very good. And that by itself does not mean anything, except that if you have a situation where the various schools can go out and hire good people and get the buildings built and the laboratories built, then you can move ahead. And it would be my job, of course, to try to work with the legislature, which is, again, what I have been doing here, to try to make sure that those resources are kept intact. There also is a great deal of money that has come into the Texas system because of oil lands, which they have had, which is what they call the Permanent University Fund. Both the University of Texas system at Austin has that, and the A&M system has that as well. It goes back a long time when the universities were given land, I think at that time they grazed cattle on them. And the idea was the income from that land was used to purchase buildings, supplement faculty salaries, and buy capital equipment. And then, of course, in time, they discovered oil and on these lands. So the net income to these two systems is about $130, $140 million per year recurring. And with that, you can move ahead reasonably well. And that is a growing and expanding fund at the present time. I think the estimate I heard was that by the end of 1980, that should be between $2 and $3 billion in a perpetual endowment, the interest then, which can be used for capital expansion. On the within the A&M system, there's about $50 million worth of construction taking place at the present time. I think I recall them telling me there were 9 major projects that are taking place. So these things, which are normally impediments for most of the Midwestern schools, I do not see there. It's a somewhat the same situation that I faced when I left Georgia Tech to come here. Georgia Tech was landlocked. It had no place to expand, and the possibilities for growth were very limited. When I came to Purdue, we had the space, we had the plans in place to expand, and that was really a very great challenge for me when I came here from Georgia Tech. Now, whether or not the funds can be used effectively is really my job. As I said, the day-to-day operation of the universities will be done by the college presidents. I do not believe in direct interference. I have always complained against that, that you don't meddle inside internally. But I will ask that long-term and short-term goals be set, that each of these units has a sense of direction, and I want to make certain that they are run and run well. So again, I'm back to primarily a management job, which I think will be, I hope, challenging for me.
As far as you know, will your decision now have any effect on the search here for a new president?
No, I think it would have no effect whatsoever. The trustees are moving along with their search. They have a list of candidates that the search committee has given to them, and what they are currently doing, of course, is looking at them, making contacts to see whether the people that are on that list are willing candidates, and then we'll go through the process of finally interviewing them and then making up their minds. And this is what the A&M system just completed. I think their formal search operation came to completion about 2 weeks ago.
Is it a safe assumption that the trustees here were, say, at least artificially working on, say, a July 1st date for a successor to you?
Well, I told them that, and I had hoped, of course, all of us hope, that by July 1 there will be somebody named. And I talked to Mr. Powers at the time the trustees recently met here. I did inform him of my plans. I told him that I had agreed to go down and talk to the people at the A&M system, and said that the way things looked, it seemed to be that we had a meeting of minds, and that if that were the case, then I would step down as of July 1. Of course, the thing that you hope for is that in the next month or so that you can find someone who is acceptable to the board and who will also agree to come. I think there's a very difficult problem that we all are aware of at the present time, that is finding college presidents seems to be a very slow and difficult task. I can't see why anybody wouldn't snap at the chance to come here to Purdue if they are seeking a college president. I think this is one of the very best presidencies in the country. And hopefully those that are on the list right now will also see that as well. It's a tremendous challenge. I think that we have perhaps one of the finest boards of trustees at any major university. I think you cannot match that. The faculty is superb. The student body, as I've said so many times, is one of the best you'd ever find on any campus. Times are tough. We all realize that, but the potential for growth is going to be here, too. And I hope that the situation in Indiana does improve, the economic climate does improve, that the next biennium is a better one than we've had in this last biennium. This next year is going to be tough for us, but always look for that bright light around the corner. So that, as I mentioned, have mentioned before, when Dr. Hubley left here, he said, "I leave you a very fine university," and I can say the same thing to anybody that follows in my job. I leave to them a very fine university.
Dr. Hansen, are you able to tell us how many other candidates there may have been for the chancellorship?
I don't know for a fact, Bob. I know they had a list given to them, and my guess from what I have heard is that there were probably 15 or 20 that they had on a final list that the board then reviewed. There were several hundred that, like here, had applied. Many of these you can screen out fairly rapidly, but they came down to a list, and I think it was of the order of 15 or 20 that they finally looked at and then made their choice on.
Where will your home be there?
Presently, it will be within the Cottage Station Bryant area. That's a very rapidly growing town in which the university is located. We had talked at one point of my possible residence in Austin, and I had tended to favor that somewhat, to be off of the campus. But the situation at the present time is that entire staff would have to move and change, and the general feeling was, for the time being, they prefer to have us remain in the Cottage Station Bryant area. And that's what my plans are at the present time. Well, it's hard to say. It's a different world. When we will be moving, it'll be around July. And everyone tells me that's the time you stay indoors, though I guess in that area it's not quite as bad as it is in some parts of Texas, but It is hot, and I'm going to miss the Midwest. I have grown up in the Midwest. I'm a Midwesterner, so I'll simply have to get used to the change.
Well, you missed deciding on when to close.
No, I will not miss the ice and snow. I have to be candid about that. But on the other hand, I with all the complaining about winter, there's always spring and the pleasures of spring that I shall miss that, but you cannot tell.
There's a school of oceanography connected to your job, is that right?
Yes, it has the largest research fleet in the nation.
Does that excite you?
Well, of course it excites me. I have felt, and I told the Board of Regents that I'd like to visit that office or that campus about once a week, especially on weekends, and try out their ships and go offshore and see what kind of sea life there is at that. But they have a very large fleet. They have, I know, a converted liner that they use for research, a 15,000-ton liner. So it is quite different.
Is the Aggie military tradition posing special challenges?
I don't really think so. The Corps of Cadets is still very active. I think it has about 2,000 members, and it's been traditional. It's gone back a long time. I think they graduate more officers, with the exception of the academies and any other institution in the country. But Purdue has had a very strong ROTC program. I have always favored that. My feeling has been that we cannot move away from having an armed force. That's the realities of the world. And I would like to see the officers in that armed force come from the very best young people that we have, who have been trained, one might say, in a civilian environment and have a good college education. So I've been a great supporter of that concept. So I'll pick that up there as part of the operation. I don't think that will pose any particular problems for me. The university itself is still going through a period of transition from being predominantly an all-male school not too many years ago to an institution now with 35,000 students, but I think over 11,000 women. So it's changing rapidly. And from that standpoint, traditions begin to change, and I think they are changing there.
How would you want the Purdue historians to note the Hansen years? If Bob Topping's assigned to the
Hansen years. That's a very difficult question to answer. I think that I would be most pleased if they would merely say that Nancy and I came to Purdue, thoroughly enjoyed what we were doing here, and really became an integral part of the Purdue family. I could not ask for more than that kind of a remembrance on my own part. The things that have happened here have been exciting, but these are not things that you can claim full credit for. The fact that I have had an outstanding administration to work with, people who have done their job thoroughly and completely, has simply been my good fortune. I think of other schools in which they've had all kinds of problems with faculty and with students. I have not had that. And I think, consequently, I have been spared these difficulties because I've been fortunate. I just had great people to work with. So nothing really in my mind, Greg, stands out as something I can specially claim. I've just been lucky. And these years have been, as I've said earlier, 11 of the happiest of my life. When I came here from Georgia Tech and you asked me about what might happen down the line, I had no idea what might take place. Georgia Tech was a fine university. I enjoyed being there. So you come to Purdue and you say, what might the problems be and how will things go? I don't think I could have ever anticipated the pleasure that we've had here. It's been just tremendous. So whatever else beyond that that a person like Mr. Topping might wish to find, I cannot tell, but I've had a great time.
When you first came here from Georgia Tech, the statement would probably come back to haunt you as much as any. It was the 7 to 10 year term.
Yeah. Did
the chancellor have that same kind of complaint?
Well, that was the first question that I was asked. They reminded me of the fact that when I came to Purdue, I made a statement of that kind, and I said, I'll never make that statement again, but I said also I could not. At least had been in the presidency at Georgia Tech, I knew what the demands were, and also in talking to colleagues that had been presidents, I felt that was reasonable. But I have never been a chancellor before, so I cannot tell. But We have no contract. We agreed on that. I serve at the pleasure of the Board of Regents, and when I say they serve at my pleasure too, so that at any given time, if we find that we have come to a parting of the ways, that's a completely open option. So I have not made any statements of that type, and we'll see what happens. Yes, that has come back to haunt me. From the seventh year on, people were asking, when are you going to quit, Hanson? And
I really didn't. Are they elected?
Yeah, they are picked by the governor, much the same way it is here, Bob. Yes, and I found them to be a very fine group of people. Again, that's critical from my standpoint. The kind of regents that you or trustees you have to work with, I've met each one of them personally and talked to them, and I came away with a very good feeling. People who are extremely enthusiastic and sincere about the system's future, they want it to move, want it to move now, and they've looked to me for that kind of leadership. But nice people, just nice, fine people, and much like the kind of fine people that I've met here in our own Board of Trustees, which I've been delighted with.
Dr. Hanson has an appointment coming up, and I don't think you've had dinner yet, have you?
I'm not hungry anymore. It's been one of those hectic days. Anything else that comes to your mind?
Can we get one shot with the hat?
I'll be glad to hold it, but that is about all I'm going to do with that.